Dear students, it is time to discuss a very important topic with regard to mutual funds, fees. How are we investors being charged? Now, as we said, people understand that they're paying for the service. They know they're being charged somehow, but they don't really understand it. You are going to understand it because not only are you a potential investor, probably a likely investor in mutual funds, but also you are going to be the investment guru for your friends and family and coworkers. And so you're going to be able to explain it to them. And I'll let you know a little secret. We in the teaching profession learn far more from our students, from teaching our students, than our students do from teaching them. So you're going to learn it to the point where you can explain it to somebody else, which is pretty cool in my humble opinion. Let's get started on slide 21 with annual operating expenses. All mutual funds, well, there's a little exception that we'll discuss later on, but a couple don't charge any fees, but all mutual funds charge fees. And the three major categories of fees are the first three here on slide 21. The management fees, which are paid to the portfolio managers and analysts who make the investment decisions. And they range anywhere from 0.25%, 0.5%, up to 2%. What does that mean? If you have a management fee of 1%, that means every year, $1 for every $100 that you have in the account is paid to the managers. 0.25% would be 25 cents. 2% would be $2. Does that make sense? Think about it and maybe write out a little equation. $100 times 1% is $1. $1. The 12B1 fee. What a silly name. 12B1 fees. Well, it comes from the Investment Company Act of 1940. These are annual fees to defray advertising, servicing, and distribution costs of the fund. And they can be up to 1% per year. And then there are the accounting fees and other expenses to pay for the maintenance of the mutual fund. Got to pay the rent, got to pay the utility bill. You have to pay the accountants and the website and all that other stuff. And then you see a little line between those three fees and the trustee fee. The trustee fee is actually only for retirement and educational savings accounts, because when you have a Roth IRA or some other type of tax qualified account, the money is actually held in your benefit by a trustee. And they usually charge $10, upwards of $30 a year. They don't usually charge that anymore. What they do is they just take it out of your account. They don't even ask you. They used to be many companies will still let you do this, but you used to be able to send in a $10 check for your retirement account and actually deduct it off of your taxes. But most people just take it out of my account. So that's why it has a little line between it. If you have a regular account, you don't pay that trustee fee. So those three fees, the management fee, the 12B1 fee, the accounting fees, you should know. Write those down. Make sure you remember them. What about on slide 22, trading costs? Well, they're not disclosed. Whereas the fees that we saw on the first page, the first slide, are disclosed in the prospectus. They're not disclosed. So how would an investor know how much the trading costs are? Well, you can ask the mutual fund, or you look at the annual turnover, which is an important statistic for your investigations into mutual funds. Why? Because this is a measure of how much trading a mutual fund does. It's measured in percentage of the amount a portfolio turns over each year. So say you had a stock mutual fund and it had 100% turnover. That would mean on average, they held a stock for about a year because they turned over the portfolio 100% in 1 year. If they had a 50% turnover, they would turn it over in 2 years. a 20% turnover, they would turn it over in 5 years. See, this gives you an idea of how long they hold on to investment on average. Now, in my humble opinion, with regard to stock and bond funds, the lower the turnover, the better. Why? Because it means that they are investors, not speculators, not traders. Okay? And that's just not traitors, traders, right? Traders. Because it, as we've discussed, are you in it for the long term or are you in it for the short term? And of course, some people might say, well, Piano, you know, he's a bit of a fuddy-duddy. We like people who buy and sell and buy and sell. And that's, you know, that's your choice. But just understand that personally, my bias is toward money managers that hold the stock for about 3 to 5 years on average. And we'll discuss why that 3 to 5 year time horizon is useful. Some people have hold on to them for even longer. Now, there's one caveat here. If you see a money market mutual fund with a 200 or 300% or 400% turnover, you might say, oh my goodness, what are they doing? Well, remember, those securities, those short-term investments, those treasury bills and corporate paper and the like, they're only good for a month or maybe, you know, 3 months or 6 months or 9 months. So of course, the turnover is going to be huge because the time frame for those investments is very short. So don't let that scare you. But if you see a stock fund with a 300%, 400% turnover, that means they're holding the stuff for 3 months or so. That's not investing, folks. They're not owning the stocks. They're renting them. Slide 23. Load versus no loads. The eternal, endless debate. Should you purchase a load fund or a no load fund? Well, load funds have gotten a very bad name, and we'll discuss why in a bit. The load fund charges a commission when shares are bought, typically 3 to 5%. And this was used to compensate the financial representative along with the fund distributor. A commission, a brokerage fee. No load funds, on the other hand, do not charge a commission when shares are bought. And these were traditionally, but as we'll see now, the brokers are not stupid, these were traditionally sold directly to shareholders. But that doesn't mean that a no load fund is going to be cheaper over the long term than a load fund. We must look at those annual operating expenses. Slide number 24. Now here's where it's going to get a little tricky, folks. So you want to take notes, write these down, study them, because we're going to test you on it. Duh, okay. But more importantly, you really need to understand the differences and the subtleties and the way that the industry has really done its best to make it impossible to understand what's going on. Traditionally, the very first shares were sold with a front-end load. So they didn't have a share class name, but now they're called Class A, typically, sometimes called Class 1. The commission is paid when the shares are purchased. They normally have lower annual operating expenses. So, you know, people weren't too excited about paying an upfront fee. So the industry said, okay, let's create these Class B shares. And if you remember back-end load, the commission is paid when the shares are redeemed. Well, Mr. Broker, Ms. Broker, what's the difference whether I pay up front or at the back end? No, relax. No, let's sit down and talk about this. You see, most of these Class B shares have what is called a contingent deferred sales charge. And I love that name, contingent. It feels so good when you say it. You'll feel a little zzz in your throat. Contingent deferred sales charge. That declines over time. So the first year, if you sold the shares the first year, you're not going to do that, of course. It's a long-term investment. You might pay 5% as a back-end fee. And then the next year, 4, 3, 2, 1, until afterwards, you pay no back-end charge. And you're going to hold the shares for a long time, aren't you, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Investor? Yes. So you're not going to pay any commission. Yeah, it's always a catch, right? Well, what happens is the 12B1 fees will charge you over, you know, 6 years or whatever, and they'll get their pound of flesh. Don't worry, they're going to get their commission. And so the 12B1 shares typically have higher 12B1 fees, and then we'll revert back to the Class A shares and have lower annual operating expenses. So you see, you pay one way or the other. And so people kind of got, you know, hip to how they were being, I mean, how they were being charged with the Class B shares. And so the brokers created the Class C shares on slide 25, which they used to call the broker no-load shares, but they're not allowed to do that anymore. They have to call them a load, but there is no front-end or back-end load. Well, maybe a 1% back-end charge if you redeem them within a year, which you should not do. If you buy a mutual fund, you should have the, unless it's a, you know, money market mutual fund, you should have the idea of holding it on for at least a year. However, many Class C shares have those higher annual operating expenses in perpetuity. Like that word, perpetuity, it lets you spit on your friends. Or for a very long time, through the 12B1 fees again, okay? Hence, they wind up costing you more than the Class A or the Class B shares over time. The Securities Exchange Commission says, no. If you have 12B1 fees that are greater than 0.25, you cannot call them no load. You have simply snuck the load into the 12B1 fees. And so Class C shares are not allowed to be called no load funds anymore. They're part of the load funds. Okay, so you got that? There are three major types of load funds, A, B, and C. Now let's take a look at no load funds. And the brokerage firms are not dumb. They realize that people don't want to pay an upfront fee. They want to pay a back-end fee, and they want to get lower annual operating expenses. So they created the advisor no-load shares. And sometimes these are called Class F for financial advisor, Class I for investment advisor, Class FI for financial advisor. These are sometimes called clean shares. They don't have a 12B1 fee or a very low 12B1 fee. So what's the catch? How does the advisor get paid? Well, what the advisor does is they tack on a financial advisory fee, a wealth management fee. We're not your brokers. Oh, no. We're your wealth managers. And we don't charge you a commission. No. We just charge you 1 or 2% every year for as long as you hold the funds. Now, folks, I'm going to come forward with my bias against these. You will wind up spending far more over the long term if you're a long-term buy and hold type of investor, which I hope you are. You're going to be holding your mutual fund for 5, 10, or more years. You're going to wind up spending far more in fees by using these wealth management accounts, wrap accounts, sometimes they're called. Now, of course, if you're the kind of person who wants to buy and then next year sell the mutual funds and go with some other company, obviously you don't want to have the Class A shares because you're going to wind up spending, you know, huge amounts of commissions over time by buying and selling and buying and selling. So this might be a better choice for you. But I submit to you that that's not the way to buy mutual funds. Mutual funds, by definition, are long-term investments. So if you need the services of a financial advisor, then I hope to show to you by the end of this presentation that you're better off with the A shares. What you will find when you go out into the industry is that they don't want to sell you the A shares. They want you to get one of these wrap accounts and charge you 1% to 2% every year in perpetuity. Dear students, I have no clients that have this. If they wanted it, I would do my best to explain to them how they're going to wind up spending more over time if they do that. Make sense? And then lastly, the last category are often called true no-load funds, which is a kind of a silly term, but it's not a legal term. It just means they have no upfront fee, no back-end fee, no 12b1 fee greater than 0.25%. And these started out with mutual funds, and they still there, deal directly with the public. In other words, they bypass the broker. And so you don't have to pay for a broker. And they're the darlings of the popular media. Oh, who needs a financial advisor? Just buy my book or watch me on the television. Listen to me. But that doesn't mean the overall fees are low. Over time, a no-load fund could wind up costing you more than a load fund. You must compare the annual operating expenses. But to be certain, and one of my students in a previous semester said, I wasn't quite sure what you meant by the A shares versus the B, C, F shares, and then the no-load funds. If you truly believe that you can be your own investment advisor, and by the end of this semester, you should know. It's one of the good things about taking this class. You'll know whether it's up your alley or it's not up your alley. Then you want to look for clean shares, no-load funds, true, whatever you want to call them, funds with no upfront fee, no back-end fee, low annual operating expenses, however they distribute them. But if you do want the services of a financial advisor, by the end of this presentation, I hope to show you that the A shares are in your best interest. Okay, enough said. Let's now take a look at an example of a real-life mutual fund. The AB, which I think is a dumb name. They used to be called AllianceBernstein. Before that, it was just Alliance. The AB Large Cap Growth Fund. Remember we talked about the one company that was involved in the scandals? This is it, Alliance. Very good company, by the way, and they almost disappeared after the scandal because of two people in the entire organization. But this is one of their better funds. It's called the Large Cap Growth Fund, AllianceBernstein, or just AB. And they have the Class A shares. Oops, they got rid of the Class B shares. Class B shares are no longer offered by many companies. And they have the Class C shares, and then they have the advisor class, the F shares, they used to be called. Now they call them the advisor class. So what do? They charge you 4.25% up front if you go with the A shares. Okay, all right, so if that's for $100, that would be $4.25. Then you pay 50 cents a year for every $100, 0.5%. For the management of the company, of the mutual fund, 0.25% for the distribution and service fees, and 11.11% for the other expenses, or 86 cents for every $100. Oh, by the way, is Coca-Cola required to tell you how much they're spending on distribution, advertising, and service fees? Is your bank required to tell you how much they're charging you for their advertising and the like? No, but the mutual fund, because of the Investment Company Act of 1940, is required to tell you. So there you go. So does that sound like a lot of money? 86 cents for every $100 you have in the account? In perpetuity, by the way. Well, it might not, but know that it's a whole lot less than what banks and life insurance companies are paying you. They're not required to show you. Now let's take a look at the B shares, even though they are now defunct. No upfront fee, but a contingent deferred back-end charge of 4%, which means the first year they charge you 4%, you take the money out. Second year they charge you 3%, third year they charge you 2%, and then the fourth year they would charge you 1%, and after 4 years they would not charge you any back-end contingent deferred sales charge. Ah, but let's take a look at what happened down here. Management fees are the same, but look what happened to the distribution and or service fees, the 12B1 fees. They jumped to 1%. Mm-hmm. That's how they're paying the financial advisors. A little bit every year, as opposed to the upfront fee of 4.25%. And then the other expenses are actually a little bit higher. Why is that? Various reasons. So they're going to charge you $1.66 every year. For, I think it was Alliance, it's 6 years, maybe four, but for 6 years, a certain amount of time. And then they would revert back to the A shares and you would be charged 86 cents going forward. So you go to your broker, you say, I don't want to pay that upfront fee. And they say, no problem. Let's show you the back-end charges. Well, I don't want to pay that back-end fee. No problem. There's always no problem, if you notice. After 4 years, you're not going to be selling your shares anytime soon. You don't pay any fee. But what about this 12B1 fee? Oh, well, I don't want to pay that back-end charge. Okay, no problem. For you, we have the Class C shares. No upfront fee. Well, if you sell the funds within 1 year, we're going to charge you 1%, but you're not going to do that, are you, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Investor? No, no, no. We're going to hang on to them for the long term. But boy, we still have to pay that distribution and or service fee. So we're really wind up paying $1.61, almost twice what we would pay if we had the A shares. Can't we get the no load and the lower operating expenses, Ms. Broker, Mr. Broker? No problem. For you, we can sell you the advisor class shares. No upfront fee, no back-end fee, no 12B1 fee, sometimes called clean shares. So 50 cents, that's doesn't matter which ones you get, it's all 50 cents for the managers. 11 cents for the other expenses, 61 cents, lower than the A shares. Oh, well, by the way, we charge you an extra 1 or 2 cents. What was that? What was that, Ms. Broker? What did you say? We tack on a 1.25 or 2% annual advisory fee in perpetuity. Yes, you're going to wind up spending a whole lot more in fees if you go with this choice, but we'll send you a bottle of wine on your birthday and take you to the golf course and it'll all be fine. Slide number 28. Here's yet another load fund. They too have gotten rid of the B shares. This is called the Growth Fund of America. And it's quite, both of these funds are very good funds. They have a higher Class A initial, notice it says maximum sales charge. We'll come back to that a little later. 5.75%, 1.5% higher, so $1.50 more. But notice they have lower management fees and lower overall fees, 64 cents versus 86 cents. There's the Class B shares, a higher starting off contingent deferred sales charge, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, after 6 years, no back end charge. But there's the 12B1 fees. So $1.41 for 8 years. I think these guys are Class B shares for 8 years. And then they revert to Class A shares. And then the Class C shares. No upfront fee, a 1% fee if you pull the money out within 1 year, but you're not going to do that. And then the higher distribution and or service fees, higher 12B1 fees. So $1.39, and I think these guys do it for 10 years. These guys do it for 10 years. And then they revert to the lower annual operating expenses. Now, they have three different versions of the F shares. This is their most their cheapest one, the most inexpensive one. No upfront fee, no back-end fee, no 12B1 fee, 30 cents a year on every $100. So even less than the previous mutual fund. But remember, exactly, there's the annual advisory fee, which is tacked on top of your annual operating expenses in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. But your broker is such a nice man, and he wears such nice clothing and drives a really expensive car. Anyway, so that was the Growth Fund of America. Now, let's take a look at another mutual fund. This is a very famous, now infamous, and they're doing their best to bury the evidence, as it's called, and that's the Legg Mason Value Trust. They never had a Class B share, but they did have the Class C shares, which they called the primary class, but then they added the Class A, so they changed the primary class to Class to Class C, which is basically what it is, the Class C shares. They're that same upfront fee as we just saw before. But notice their management fees are 69 cents, 25 cents for the 12B1 fees, 14. So $1.08 higher than the previous two. The Class C shares, which by far are the most popular of this mutual fund, have no upfront fee, have a contingent deferred sales charge of 0.95% only for the first year, which is actually in your best interest. You don't want to be panicking after 6 months or 8 months. And then there's 0.95%, not quite a percent, but 1%, but almost close. And we have $1.75. And this is typical of the Legg Mason Value Trust. This is typical of what most investors were paying for in perpetuity. But they, of course, they had their Class FI shares, the Financial Investment Advisor shares. No upfront fee, no back-end fee, still the 12B1 fee, $1.16, a lot more than the Large Cap Growth Fund and the Growth Fund of America. But again, what's the difference with the F shares? They charge an extra 1% or 2%, and that's the advisors charging that, your brokers charging that. Now, this company has institutional shares, which happen to be the lowest of this company, not the lowest of the three mutual funds we've looked at so far. But how do you get the institutional shares? Do you have to be institutionalized to do that? Anyway, the Legg Mason Value Trust is no longer called that anymore. They changed the name to ClearBridge Value Trust. Why did they do that? Well, we're going to see in just a little bit why they changed the name. Okay, so now let's take a look at something completely different. This is an index fund. In fact, it is one of the world's most famous index funds, and that's called the Vanguard 500 Index. Remember the people in the top hats? Well, guess what? This mutual fund doesn't have any. Why? Because it invests in a list of stocks called the Standard & Poor's 500 Index. Now, we're going to spend some time on this in our next chapter on stocks. So it's a bit of a why we said sometimes instructors, professors like to do mutual funds after they do stocks and bonds, because we're going to be using a stock index before we delve deeply into stocks. But suffice to know that the Standard & Poor's 500 Index is simply a list of 500 companies. That's all it is. It's traditionally the 500 largest companies in the United States. And so you or I could run this fund. Assuming we can read the list of 500 companies, you buy the ones that are on the list, you don't buy the ones that are off the list. It's that simple. This is called passive management. The first three mutual funds we looked at were actively managed, which meant that the investment advisors, the management individuals, the portfolio managers, the portfolio counselors, whatever you want to call them, the research analysts, they go out and they decide whether they want to buy GM or Ford or Honda or Toyota or Tesla. Whereas these managers for the Index 500 simply look at the list of 500 companies and buy them. And if they're not on the list, they don't buy them. Hence, the management fees are far lower than anything we've seen so far, aren't they? There's no upfront fee. There's no back-end fee. There's no 12B1 fee unless your account is less than $10,000. Then they charge you $20. I think Vanguard might have lowered it to $3,000. I'm not sure. But they used to charge you $20 if your account was less than $10,000. Of course, you can enroll in electronic delivery, and then, you know, then they don't have to send anything out, so they don't charge anything. They don't have to send anything in the U.S. mail. They send it to you via email. And then other expenses. So 14 cents lower than anything we've seen. Well, it better be lower than anything we've seen. They're not doing any research. And folks, if a mutual fund is doing their job well, if an actively managed mutual fund is doing its job well, then those management fees are going to be substantial because it costs money to run a well-run investment organization, which has to be global now because the world is global. And you think you look at a company like Coca-Cola, they make 80% of their money outside the United States. You better have people all around the world researching companies. Whereas if you're just looking at a list, yeah, it can be very low fees because you're not paying for any research. We'll come back to this idea as we discuss the current tug of war between actively managed mutual funds and passively managed index mutual funds. Slide number 31, Fidelity 500 Index Fund. Vanguard pioneered low-fee mutual funds and was able to overtake Fidelity as the number one mutual fund company. Oh, yeah. So what did Fidelity do? If you can't beat them, join them. Fidelity responded by eliminating all sales loads, creating their own index funds, and lowering their fees below Vanguard. In fact, there's a, I think it's two, it used to be two, now I think it's three. There are three, or maybe four, maybe they made four. There are two or three or four Fidelity index funds that don't charge any fees. How do they do that? Well, we made mention of it. It's called a loss leader. Get the people in the door and start them on a free service and then sell them some other services. Huh? What do you think? Maybe, maybe not. But look at this. 1.5 cents. How low can you go? Pretty darn good, isn't it? Yeah, I think it is. And that's what, if you're, you know, interested in index funds, you want to look for the lowest cost index fund. Now, having said that, we're going to remind you about this. You must be careful because some index funds have fairly high annual operating expenses. Now, how could they compete? Well, what they do is they make some kind of sweetheart deal with an insurance company, maybe a broker, usually insurance companies, that then go to the employers who sponsor these 401k plans, and they sneak in these high-fee index funds into the 401ks, the 403bs. Who would do that? Southwestern Community College. And I kept jumping up and down and screaming and hollering and trying to explain to my colleagues that this is what this company has done to us nationwide on your backside. And nobody would believe me until one of the people in HR, in our human resources department, took my class. And she said to me afterwards, you know, we're really being screwed. I said, yes, I've been telling everybody that for... Okay, well, don't worry. I'm going to remind you because you are going to look like a genius when you call out that big jerk in the three-piece suit who's telling you how wonderful your plan is. And then you say, well, how come this index fund is so expensive compared to Fidelity's or Vanguard's? And that's when he's going to go, ah, nah, nah, nah. Slide 32. So now let's take a look at the fees over 1, 3, 5 years, and 10-year periods. And these are all available in the prospectuses that must accompany your purchase of the mutual fund. Well, now they don't send it to you anymore. They just say, click here that you've read it anyway. So there's the AB, AllianceBernstein, Large Cap Growth Fund. And although it looks as though the advisor shares are the best deal, this does not include the advisor's annual fee. Adding the advisor's typical fee of 1 to 2% per year would easily add an additional $1,300, $2,600 to the total cost. So over the long term, which is the best deal? The A shares. Notice that the A shares are much more expensive to begin with. After 3 years, they're still more expensive, but then after 5 years, yeah, the others have caught up, haven't they? And after 10 years going forward, the others are more expensive. And even though the advisor class shares look cheaper, We're not. See, notice it says excludes advisor's fee. Right. So you know, and we're going to see it even more so, that the Class A shares, if you need a financial advisor, are your better bet. Oh, by the way, guess which shares are the most popular with financial brokerage firms these days? The advisor class shares with the additional advisory fee. Here's the Legg Mason Value Trust. Again, we see that the Class A shares wind up being cheaper than the Class C shares. The financial intermediary shares look cheaper, but yeah, you got to tack on that advisor as a fee. And in this case, the institutional class looks great. Well, how do you get them? Well, are you a large pension fund, a university endowment, or a tax-exempt charity that has at least $1 million to invest with them? Get out of here if you're not. So yeah, we little people don't get the institutional class shares. Now, look at the Vanguard 500 Index Fund. Look at the fees. The fees for passively managed index funds will almost always be less than actively managed funds. Actually, Vanguard has closed the investor class shares, and they now want investors to use the Admiral class shares, which used to be only available with a minimum of $100,000, but now they allow you to buy them with only $3,000. Do you remember the exchange-traded ETFs that often have fees lower than the index funds? Yes. The Vanguard ETF that tracks the total U.S. stock market has an expense ratio of only 3 cents for every $100. And as we said just recently, now it's up to four. I knew it was up to four. I forgot that. Vanguard now has four index funds with zero annual fees. How do they make any money doing that? Well, off of those funds, they don't make any money. But what they want to do is get you in the door, get you started with Fidelity, and then hopefully you'll buy other mutual funds that do have fees, and that's how they're going to recoup the loss leader, as it's called. Now, notice, as I've already said, you have to be careful. Some 401k plans, 403bs, have high fee index funds. Why do they do that? Because the insurance company, it's typically an insurance company, but not always, gets some kind of kickback, as we'll discuss when we discuss brokerage accounts. They get a remuneration, which is a fancy word of saying they get paid to sell their funds. Now, who would do that to their employees? As we said, Southwestern College did it. And I don't blame anybody at Southwestern College. They didn't know what was going on. At the initial meeting when the new company was coming in and telling us how wonderful they were, this was Nationwide, they didn't realize they had a ringer in the audience, me. And these two guys, I felt sorry for them because they were, I don't know what to say about them, but someone had given them a PowerPoint with about 60 slides, and it was a 45-minute presentation. Now, anybody who's done it, you figure at least 3 minutes per slide, sometimes more. So they were just flipping. They looked really bad. They were flipping through trying to find slides that made sense. And I'm looking through the list of mutual funds and looking at the expenses, and they had these Gartmore, I forget exactly what they were called, but they were the index funds. And they had 91 cents, 0.91%, 91 cents for every $100. And I said, well, pardon me, how come you have these index funds that have fees that are, 5-10 times higher than anything Vanguard or Fidelity has? And you could just see the blood draining from their faces. And they say, we're working on a cheaper index fund. We'll have it for you soon. And everybody just looked at me. What did you just ask him, Piano? It turned out they did. They got their own mutual fund, Nationwide fund, and it did have cheaper than the Galtmore, but not much. It went down from 0.91 to, I think, to 0.63 or something. I can't remember now. It was a while ago. So this is going to be you. You're going to be the ringer. you're going to be the one who exposes the big jerks in the three-piece suits, and they should just turn around and walk away and just say, okay, I got caught. But they won't, of course, because they're making too much money. And your colleagues, your work coworkers are going to think, where did you learn that? Wow, you are so bright. You are geniuses. And what are you going to tell them, right? Yeah, you're going to tell them, Business 123, Introduction to Investments, Southwestern Community College. Okay, let's continue. Slide number 35. Now, we said that the A shares have an upfront sales charge, and they are. But that, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but it said maximum sales charge. In the case of the Growth Fund of America, up to $25,000 is charged at 5.75%. But as soon as you put in more, or your account grows higher than $25,000, that sales charge goes to 5%. When you hit 100,000, it's 4.5. When you hit when you hit 50,000, it's 4.5. When you hit 100,000, it's 3.5. 250, 2.5, 500, 2, 1.5, it's 750. And if you have over $1 million, or when your account grows to over $1 million, the Class A shares no longer have any sales charge. You think, yeah, exactly. They cater to the very wealthy. And for this reason, especially if you're a long-term oriented investor, I believe the Class A shares are a much better deal. Because if you start early, folks, as we've shown, you can build a substantial amount. And we're going to take a look at some hypothetical illustrations that will show you what you can build over your working career. Now, some brokers, now this is quite some time ago because now it's totally verboten. You can lose your license, you get fined. Some brokers would fail to inform their clients of this feature. Instead, as the client approached the breakpoint, the broker would advise them to start another fund. Wait, they would say, okay, well, we're done with this fund. Let's go to another company and start another company. Because all the companies with a fund family, they all... We'll get into fund families later on, but you could go with another mutual fund in this same family, and that sales charge breakpoint would still apply. But they would move you to a whole other mutual fund company with a different family of funds. And when I heard this, I just could not believe it. I just couldn't believe that somebody would have such greed and horrible ethics. But it was going on. And now, once it was found out that it was going on, you as a broker can lose your license and get fined. And I don't know if there's criminal penalties involved, but still, there should be because you're basically stealing. And now, slide 36 shows the contingent deferred sales charge for the AB AllianceBernstein Large Cap Growth Fund. Again, the first year, if you sell the shares, but you're not going to do that, they'll charge you 4%. The second year, 3%, third year, 2%, fourth year, 1%. And after 4 years, you no longer pay the back end charge. But remember, the Class B shares do pay more in annual fees. And I think for AllianceBernstein, it's 6 years, or maybe it's only 4 years. By the way, if you've ever heard of annuities, and we'll skewer annuities at the end of the semester, annuities from life insurance companies usually have this same type of surrender charge schedule. They don't call it contingent deferred sales charge. They call it surrender charge. Except it starts at 20% or 25% and goes down 1% a year. Yeah, don't ever trust your investments with an insurance company, dear students. Okay. Oh, boy. I'm exhausted. How about you? Yeah, I know. It's confusing. But you really need to go back and study these. Why? Because I'm going to ask you on the test. Yeah. But more importantly, you are the resource for your friends and family and coworkers. And who knows, you might even make it into the industry someday. I'm hoping. And so you have to know this stuff very, very well. All right. So now that you know everything you need to know about class shares and fees, which would you choose? I'm going to give you $10,000 10 years ago. Would you choose the AB Large Cap Growth Fund, the Growth Fund of America, both Class A shares, because we know that the A shares are a better deal over time? Would you choose the Legg Mason Value Trust? They didn't have the Class A shares 10 years ago, so you would have chosen the Class C shares. Or would you go with the abstemious? You like that word, abstemious? It's a fancy word for cheap. Vanguard Index 500 Fund. Noting that all these funds basically are in the same category, large companies, mostly domestic, United States based. Which one do you want? Okay. Wow. Last 10 years have been pretty darn good. Even though many of us still remember 2008. Fees are important, but they certainly do not tell you the whole story. When comparing mutual funds, you must look at many attributes, not the least of which are the rates of return, preferably over long time periods. And many people say, well, 10 years is certainly long enough. I don't think so, especially the last 10 years, which have been very, very unusual since the Great Recession. But notice, the AB Large Cap Growth Fund clobbered everybody else. Even though you went with the A shares, the Growth Fund of America did pretty darn well. Whereas the Legg Mason Value Trust, what happened? Well, it's no longer called the Legg Mason Value Trust. Now it's called the ClearBridge Value Trust. And this fund, if you had gone back and looked at this same data in the mid-2000s, you would have been astounded at how well it had done vis-a-vis the others. It was very famous. And its leader, Bill Miller, who we'll come back to later, was the celebrated investment advisor of the world. He had beaten the Standard & Poor's 500 index 15 years in a row. Pretty darn good. But then he, like a star, fell and crashed, a shooting star, and burned and stunk up the place royally. And now he's no longer associated with the mutual fund. But if you simply went with the index fund, you did pretty darn well, huh? Now, how come you didn't do as well as the index? Well, because remember, there's a certain amount of fees involved. And even with an index fund, unless you go with the Fidelity that don't have any fees. And notice that if you had gotten the A shares at the net asset value, meaning you had over $1 million to invest, or if you become a broker, they'll waive the fees because you're working for the company, right? You would have had 17.37% with the AB Large Cap Growth Fund and 15.28% for the Growth Fund of America. And now we're getting close to those same percentages that we'll see when everything crashes and burns. When we get close to 18, 19% on a 10-year basis, 20%, yeah, that's... we're not there yet! I don't know when it's going to happen, but I know we're long overdue, so we'll see. We'll see. But notice, take note, actively managed funds can beat the indices. They often don't. They can do much worse than the indices. Index funds can't beat the index because they are the index, and they will typically do a little bit less because of the fees. And now you begin to see how difficult it is for actively managed funds to beat the index. Why? Because if their fees are 1%, that means they have to do 1% better than the index just to break even. You see that, how that works? So already the mutual fund has one hand tied behind its back in that it has to charge to be in existence to do the job. But some funds have shown that they're worth that 1% or whatever the annual fees are. And some funds have shown that they're not worth that. And that's the trick. You might hear, and we'll come back to this in our next presentation, you might hear people say, oh, you should never go with an actively managed fund, only index funds. Well, yeah, a lot of actively managed funds don't beat the index, but a lot of them do. So that's your job, our job, to find the good ones that have done well over decades. So now let's do some checking for comprehension. Again, we saw these in the previous chapter. Get your ABCD share cards out, which we would do in the face-to-face class. These shares do not have upfront sales load. Instead, they assess a decreasing back-end load if you withdraw your money within 6 years. The annual operating expense is higher, courtesy of the 12B1 fees. No upfront fee, but a back-end fee. There's the key. B shares. They normally revert to the A shares after 6, 8 years, whatever, and then you get the lower annual operating expenses. But as we said, the B shares are disappearing. They are no longer, they are persona non gratis in the investment world. How about these shares on slide 39? They do not have an upfront fee, only a 1% back-end fee if redeemed within 1 year. The advisor called them no load, but you notice that the annual operating expense is higher than the other share classes. Again, courtesy of the ubiquitous 12B1 fees. Right, these are the Class C shares. They have no upfront fee, a 1% fee if you take the money out within a year, but higher annual operating expenses, sometimes for 10 years or longer. And then slide 40. Your advisor tells you that these shares have no sales fee, a very low annual operating expense. She mumbles something about wealth management. These shares are the FRI shares. She did her best not to explain to you that her brokerage firm is going to charge you an extra 2% each year. Yeah. And I relate this story elsewhere, but a few years back, well, actually more than a few years back, the industry was still moving to this new model where I charge people an annual operating expense. And I was at some kind of due with a lot of other brokers, and we were all wearing our suits. So I was disguised as a reputable broker who would do the things that their brokerage firm tells them to do. And I was explaining that I did not think that the new model of charging people an extra 1% or 2% a year was in the client's best interest, that they were going to spend far more in fees if they just simply held on to their investment. And this guy looked at me and said, "What are you worried about? What are you talking about? You send them a bottle of wine on their birthday, take them to the steakhouse, take them out golfing. They'll love you." And I was... I was literally just dumbfounded. I didn't know what to say, so I just kept my mouth shut because I wasn't going to argue with the guy. But they'll wind up spending a lot more money, and they would probably say, "But that's the idea, dumb. Shut up. Oh, by the way, there are dozens of other share classes depending upon the mutual fund. But don't worry, all of them are simply variations on the four main themes that we've learned today. So what do you need to do? Go back and study these share classes. Know them so that if I called you up at 2 o'clock in the morning and said, "What are the Class B shares?" "Oh, they don't charge an upfront fee, but a contingent deferred back-end charge and higher annual operating expenses for a certain number of years." Okay? All right. That's the deal. Because you need to learn this because you are the expert. You're going to be the guru for your friends, family, and coworkers, and it is a weighty responsibility. Okay. You thought this was bad. In our next presentation, we are going to try to get our arms around the entire industry and discuss the various types of mutual funds. And we're only going to scratch the surface, folks. See you at our next presentation. We are so proud of you. Thank you so much for being in our class.